Want to learn how to podcast like me? Join us for the How to Podcast Weekend Webinar, June 25th and June 26th. You can sign up at howtopodcast.biz.
This is Podness Daily, episode number 313. I am your host, Tim Kelly, or otherwise known as Timster. And we have a good show for you today. Our guest on the line with me right now is Mark. Actually, he's known as Eddie in our forums and in our community. And Mark is from compfix.ie. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, Tim, sir. I'm good.
And you are far away from me. You're actually in Ireland. So that's kind of...
Yeah, it's a couple of thousand miles away.
Yeah. Hey, how's the weather there?
It's actually been good. No rain, which is always a plus.
Really? Yeah. Well, down here in southern Georgia, man, it's been like desert-like, 100 degrees. It's just been brutal compared to our Midwestern guys here. They're been soaked with rain, but yeah, I wish they'd send some my way. Hey, before we get started, I want to talk about something really quick, Mark, if you don't mind.
I want
everybody, and I'm going to hold this up to my camera. I want everybody to watch out for this. This company here, and I don't even know if they can see it. It's called Domain Registry of America. And this came to me in the mail. It's an official looking letter. And I mean, these guys went out of their way to make this look as real as possible. And basically what it is they're telling me that my domain is expiring and they're telling me that I need to renew now. And they gave me like 7 days to renew, or they claim that my domain would become null and void. And there's this real fine print on the back of this paper. I mean, everything looks completely legitimate. This is a scam. It's a known scam. I have my domain through GoDaddy. So I don't know why I'm getting a letter from Domain Registry of America telling me about my domains. But I've done some research on it, and I don't even know how in the world they're still in business. And I think they're in a couple other countries too. But basically, if you sign this paper or you sign up to renew your domain name through them, that gives them full right to take control of your domain. Not take control, but basically it takes it away from like whoever you originally got your domain from, and it signs it over to their company. So be wary, everybody, about the Domain Registry of America. Okay. I had to get off my soapbox there. All right, Mark, tell us what's going on your half of the world over there.
Okay, so I run a small PC and laptop repair business based in Dublin. It's just myself, and I focus mainly on residential, but I do have some small business clientele as well. I suppose I'm going to kick into a couple of jobs that I've been doing recently. Mostly laptops. I probably see maybe one desktop for every 20 laptops. I'm sure everyone in the industry is kind of seeing the same kind of ratio. Okay, so one of the most recent ones was a Dell Inspiron 1501. And it was having some power issues. It was powering up fine. It would stay on for as long as possible with the AC in, but it just wouldn't charge the battery. So I ran through some tests on the power adapter as well as the DC jack, and everything seemed fine. And it was actually when I was about to ring the customer and say, you know, look, it looks like a motherboard. And I was literally putting the motherboard back into the case when I seen a small capacitor blown right beside the DC jack.
This was on a motherboard? I mean, on a desktop? On a laptop?
Laptop. So I ran some more tests right beside the DC jack, and the voltage wasn't getting from the DC over to the battery charger. So I replaced the capacitor, which is, I know it seems difficult, but it was Lofi that recommended a hot air station. So it was the I think it's the 898D.
Yes.
That is, you got one?
Yes, I got the exact same one he had. It's the 898D Kindle.
Yeah, I can see it there. It's a great piece of equipment.
Yes, it is.
And it's cheap, so I mean it's gonna be one job, maybe one and a half jobs to pay for itself. But once I replaced the capacitor, the battery started charging up, no problem, and it was an easy enough fix. But without the hot air station, I wouldn't have been able to do it.
Oh, absolutely not.
I owe Lofty a lot of money for recommending that.
Oh, Lofty, yeah. What's just the guy has just a wealth of information. He's helped me a ton too. You know, I owe almost all of my hot air rework station skills to Lofty, actually. Now that's, you know, what really amazes me and surprises me about what you were talking about there is the fact that there's a bad capacitor on a motherboard out of a laptop. And, I've done quite a few laptops. I think here in the United States, desktops are still quite common, I would say, but I still get more laptops than desktops. But I've never had a laptop motherboard where I've came across a bad capacitor. So that's a rarity in my opinion. You don't come across that much, do you?
No, I've seen a couple, but when I have seen them, they're right beside where the DC jack is. And it could be, most of the time when I've seen it, it's because they're using a third party adapter. That's just, it's probably outputting too much voltage. It's killing them.
You make a very good point there. Awesome, dude. So you replaced that capacitor, and I would imagine used like a really small tip on the end of the your rework station there, the smallest one.
I actually used the hot air to take off the capacitor. It came off like within a few seconds, and then used a soldering iron to put the new one in.
Sweet. Yep. Gotta love those hot air rework stations, man. Great story.
The next one is an Acer Aspire. This was really puzzling. The client came in and said their daughter had spilled orange juice all over the board, but it was still working. But every time you plugged it in, it would just automatically boot and then constantly power cycle. So eventually the battery ran out and nothing happening. So I plugged it in just with the AC, and it was doing the same thing, recycling and recycling. So I stripped it down, cleaned it up, and plugged it in again, same thing. So after a bit more inspection, I figured it was the actual power button had become stuck down. And so every time you plugged it in, it was automatically initiating the power. So what I had to do is I had an old motherboard, and I mean the power buttons on laptops, they're like a tree prong. So you've got two on one side and one on the other, and it was easy enough to take off. But once I had a new one on there, once you press power, it'd come on and it wouldn't recycle. So It was a really tricky one, and it was something I've never seen before.
Okay, I'm trying to picture this. The power button, was it the button actually on a circuit board, or was it wire tethered to the motherboard? Or
it was actually on the board itself. It wasn't one of the kind of the separate power boards, or it wasn't on a cable.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah,
the only way to troubleshoot that, then, like you say, would be just put another board in. But I guess you said you had one around, so.
Yeah, I took a power button off another motherboard that was kind of dead. So it's useful to have those boards around, even for stuff like capacitors, power buttons, or what else? Even where your keyboard, the latch that locks down your keyboard. Mm-hmm. I've seen a couple of those break where the client has kind of had a go at fixing it and they've just broken it. So having kind of spare motherboards around is always good.
Okay, on that one, on the Acer, you said that the power button was actually soldered to the motherboard or attached to the motherboard.
Yeah.
Okay. I got you. So that little those little buttons are small, man.
Yeah.
So I guess it was Hot Air Reworked to the rescue again on that.
With that one, because it was because there was plastic involved in the button, I decided
A plastic one. I gotcha.
Yeah, I decided to use the solder iron to get the solder rather than have the plastic melt onto the board. So it was a bit tricky, but I got it going.
Man, you got lucky you had an extra button around there for that. Great find, man. That, you know, I always love it when, and I think it's similar, you know, I worked on an HP, an older HP that had the power button and also the, you know, the LEDs that are on a separate PCB, you know, that actually snap on to the motherboard.
Yeah.
And on that particular instance, it had the same symptoms you were talking about. And the only way to rule out the power button is to actually have another power button. In that case, what I was able to do was find one on eBay really cheap. And, it's a shot in the dark. But if it's not the power button, all I was out was like $6. And sure enough, though, when that power button came, I switched them out, powered it. It came right on. I was like, go figure. You're right, man. There's power buttons. You got to eliminate those as the problem before you confirm dead motherboard.
Yeah. And I think the thing with working with laptop board repairs is that you got to think about it from a logical point of view. For someone that doesn't do board repairs, think about it. Where is the power supposed to go? Why is it not? Why might it not be going there? And just test it with your multimeter and go from there. And that's how you're going to learn. Obviously, don't do it with a client's laptop. But I mean, if you can pick up a couple of broken ones and spend a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, you're going to pick it up.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And, you know, cover every angle. That's what voltmeters are for, you know. You got to cover all the leads, all the angles, and, eliminate all possibilities before you, you know, make a diagnosis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool, man.
Some other work that I've been doing, actually, I know we spoke about my involvement in gaming just beforehand, but
yes.
I got a referral from a friend of mine, and he deals with a lot of PR companies here in Ireland that would do computer game launches. And I've done a couple now where they're doing online promotions for their game launches. So I've been involved. I think it was the Medal of Honor launch back about 6 or 7 months ago, where they had a promo day where they had one of the directors from DICE come in. And so I set up a local network, got port forwarding set up. So all the NATs on the PlayStation 3s were open so they could communicate online and stuff like that. So it's something to kind of, for techs out there to maybe consider with the industry of gaming. I mean, it's huge. So with game launch and stuff like that, there's a bit of business there to be had if someone knew the right people.
That's a big name, dude. Medal of Honor. I know what you're saying. That you really bring up a good point. And unfortunately, here in my area, I don't know, for some reason, there's not a lot of tech stuff that comes through here, gaming wise either. But there's plenty of other places that are. So you do bring up a good point. You know, offer your services.
Yeah, and it's not something that you're going to think about, but it's out there, and there's probably a few more kind of industries like that. Maybe if there's something like a festival, you could set up wireless network throughout, whether it's hotspots or just open network, stuff like that. So,
absolutely, man, that's really great. And yes, you are the almost a maven in the gaming industry. We won't get into that though. Actually, I have a question to ask you later about a game that I noticed you took an interest on, but we'll talk about that towards the end of the show. So, cool, man. Next thing on your list here, education. Aha, that's important.
Yeah, well, it's education from a business and tech point of view. I know Bryce Whitty from Technibble has been on a couple of times, and he spoke about a few books that he's read. So I just want to kind of include a few of my own. The first one up is Rework by Jason Fried of, I think it's 37 Signals, if I'm correct. Yeah, it is. Basically, Jason goes in to speak about how to approach your work in that. Don't think of it as an office job. Think kind of outside the box and work on productivity. And I think one of his main points is to avoid meetings at all costs, no matter what industry you're in.
I agree with that one.
Yeah, they're not that productive. The second one I want to talk about is actually a website. And it's called pixelofinc.com. And what it is it's a bargain and free book source from Amazon. So I've subscribed to their RSS. And on a weekly basis, they'll send out feeds on bargain books or free books. But I've got maybe about 100 books in the last 6 months from there on business.
Oh, wow. These are pretty decent looking books here, too.
Yeah, they're good quality. And I mean, they're not, I think with the thing, what it is with the books is that, you know, you're not, they might be 50 pages long, and one page of that might be valuable, but it's worth reading those 50 pages to get to that one, the one page that's going to help you or your business.
Gotcha. Oh, man, great tip.
I've been using that for a few months.
99 cents was listed as $13 on some of these. Really, really good deals there. Sweet. Yeah. That's pixelofinc.com, if anybody's wondering.
Now that's primarily free books for the US. But there is a way of getting them free in the UK and Ireland. If anyone wants to drop me a mail or a PM on the site, I can explain. But I don't want to get Steve in trouble.
Don't worry about that.
The next book is actually from a UK author that's based here in Ireland, and his book is called Fire in the Belly. When you go out on your own, you do have support from kind of family and friends, but there's always going to be kind of that bit of doubt from them. They're never going to understand the late hours and stuff like that. So he goes on to explain how best to approach going self-employed and how you're going to be seen as from other people's point of view. So not only is it a good book for you to read as from running your own business, but it's also good to say, give it to your partner or your parents so they can actually understand what your mindset is going forward.
Yes. And I would imagine the subject you're talking about in that book would be things like, you just don't know how important it is about like your appearance, you know, first impressions with your customers. You know, always stand tall, don't slouch, you know, simple stuff, things that, you know, that people kind of look for, you know, just in general, you know, and so books like that are very important, I think.
Yeah, there's a small overlap with that book and The E-Myth, and it goes on to talk about what your roles are in a business. I mean, for me as a one-man business, I'm sales director, marketing director, finance director, technical director. So, I mean, you've got all these roles that you got to manage. So it can be tough. So you got to realize that you got to encompass everything into it.
Yeah, man, that is any kind of education or reading, good reading that you can get on that subject would be very important, I would think, for anybody trying to start their own computer repair business.
Yeah, it's a must. You got to, I've probably done more business education in the last 12 months than I have tech education. And it's purely,
right?
Yeah, you have to. It's a must. And I think from some of the guests on Podnuts have given some great, great advice. It's a great resource.
Mark, how long have you been in business?
I am actually in business 12 months to today. Today was
awesome.
My first anniversary. Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
It's been a good year. I'm trying to find out where where I'm at in terms of customer base and what are the kind of niche markets that I can tap into.
Exactly. Kind of,
as well as Confix, I have another website called screenreplacement.ie. And that came about purely from keeping an eye on my analytics with Google and also my AdWords clicks. And I noticed that the keyword was available, and I just snatched it up, and I've got a good bit of business from it. I replace probably 2 to 3 laptop screens a week.
Yeah, man, the laptop screens are one of my favorite and one of the most profitable. You know, to a tech like you and I, it's just really one of the easiest things to do, unless you're doing it on a Mac or something. But I'm kind of like you in that regard. You know, I'm just kind of, I got myself out there. I got customers. I'm still relatively new to the game. I would say, you know, I was probably a little over a year and a half. I'm into it really serious, and I'm just kind of letting it take me where it goes right now, and try to, feel my way and see where I fit in. But it's been a blast, and I use AdWords also. So, I hang my hat on that with what I'm doing here. So I'm with you on that one.
Did you start out straight away as a retail unit, or how did you go about it?
Not retail, no. Actually, I worked in construction for over 25 years almost, and I always had computers as a hobby of mine. Building computers was what I really loved to do, and I was building really high end stuff. And I just started thinking, you know, geez, if I can build computers, I could probably fix computers. So that's whenever a light bulb went off in my head, and I'm going, let me do some research on fixing computers here. And guess what I ran across? Podnuts. So yeah, and in the story, man, economy here is terrible. Construction business isn't, you don't want to be in here now. I'm full-time computer repair. I got my own shop. I'm loving it. So far everything is working out really well, and I like what I do.
Yeah. That's the main thing for me, is that I love doing what I do. And I'm in the process of kind of looking at retail units at the moment. I'm kind of thinking about it, whether I should get a retail unit or go for an office, but, I'm not sure if I'd probably, it depends on my business mix. The most of my clients have been kind of residential, so to be laptops, so I wouldn't necessarily need to do it on site. I mean, they could drop it off to a shop. So, but I still haven't kind of made a final decision on that.
Yeah, the way I look at it is, you know, if you could get a shop, it doesn't have to be a big shop in like a really busy corner or a busy street. You know, not only do you have a shop, you know, but you know, your shop becomes your advertisement. I mean, so you kind of kill two birds with one stone on that. You have something else, you know, people that go down a certain street always see your sign, always see your business. And I think that really helps in attracting customers.
Yeah, it kind of sells itself. I mean, I do. The two units that I'm looking at the moment they'd be kind of on the main route for people from a number of suburbs on the way into the city center. So it means that opening hours would be 8 a.m. to probably 6:30 in the evening. So it means I can get people on the way in and on the way home.
Exactly.
Whereas middle of the day would probably be the quiet time where I could get the work done.
Yep, I agree.
It's something I've been thinking about, but I'm not sure whether I'm going to go ahead. I have to run over some figures and see what's going to happen.
Yeah, just, you know, if I was you, I would take my time. Just take your time and see where it takes you, and it'll come to you.
Yeah. The next thing on my list to discuss is the Podnut laptop videos. I got these maybe 12, 15 months ago. And like, even though I had quite a bit of experience with fixing laptops and computers, I was still able to pick up quite a bit of information, and not necessarily on a technical point of view, but even how Steve goes about things in his process of either troubleshooting or even the way he puts back laptops together. So it's definitely something that people should consider. And again, it's one job that you're going to do that it's going to help you with, and they're paid for.
Oh, man, I couldn't agree any more with you. You know, that's really a tough thing for a lot of techs is disassembling and troubleshooting the laptops down motherboard level, DC jack level, just any of the things that we talk about here, screens, you know, just the troubleshooting specs, you know, the steps that you go through to troubleshoot laptops. These are at laptoprepairvideos.com, and they will help you tremendously in troubleshooting laptops and kind of giving you a general idea, not just any specific laptop. It's like Steve says, you know, if you watch the videos, you will have a general knowledge of how to troubleshoot and repair all laptops. So, you know, keep that in mind. That's laptoprepairvideos.com.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you have the tech basics, you can pretty much troubleshoot any computer or laptop. So it's just a matter of going back to the fundamentals and working from there.
I agree.
The next thing is the Tech Neville Business Kit. This is actually one of the guys over in the forums in the process of giving this a revival. So I think it's going to come out soon, maybe June, July, where they're going to have a complete overhaul of the forms and stuff like that. But while I haven't used a lot of the forms within the kit, I have got some ideas from them. And if you're starting out, this is a must. It's going to save you so much time in terms of preparation and what you need. All you have to do is literally, if you're not really bothered with your paperwork, all you have to do is drop your logo in and print it off or send it to your printer and you're done. For most of them, I mean, with the maintenance agreements and stuff that he's included, you're obviously going to have to maybe have your lawyer or your solicitor. Solicitor would be a lawyer over here in Ireland.
Okay.
Take a look at them and just kind of go over the T&Cs for your local district. But again, it's a great resource. It's quite cheap and it's something that's going to stand to you down the line, because I know myself, paperwork, I'm not a big fan of it, but it just needs to get done.
Yeah. So I've never used the Tech Neville Business Kit, but there are so many Podnuts people that just do use them. So just to refresh here, the Tech Neville Business Kit has sort of a layout. They have papers. For instance, if a customer comes in and picks up a computer, they have like a sign out sheet or a work order sheet that has, you know, basically, I guess you would say, all of the small print for them to sign that would help cover you in case it sort of makes you less liable if something was to happen, say with their data or any other kind of legal ramifications. And, you know, and then what I guess he would provide something in that kit to all the way up to when you come pick up your computer. You know, things they sign on that. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for the likes of a work order, I mean, if someone comes back and says, oh, you know, my computer's in this, and I look at the work order and they said, oh, it's just a virus, but, you know, their screen is blinking on and off. I mean, if they don't have it in the work order, I can't really cover it. But again, you have to, it's up to kind of managing the customer's expectations as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, so head on over to Tech Neville, guys. I think that's technibble.com. Is that right? Or over to their forums anyways, and you'll definitely be able to find the Tech Neville Business Kit.
Yeah, I know with the rejuvenation of the business kit, whoever has previously purchased it will automatically get the upgrade for free. So.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool, man. That's our good friend Bryce over there at Tech Neville. Awesome.
Okay,
what else
so
we got, Art?
We're on to tools, and tools. I didn't really want to. I suppose you guys had Mark Rusinovich. Mark was on a few weeks ago, and I'm a big fan of the Sys Internals Toolkit.
Sysinternals, yeah.
Auto Runs is probably my favorite tool out of the lot. It's probably the first piece of software I'll run on any laptop or computer that I get in. Just gives me a chance to stop viruses and kind of just give it a quick tune up before I kind of start on anything else.
Yeah. So the Auto Runs will be like, it'd be like running or looking at your processes, but it's like souped up. Auto Runs will show you some things that like your Explorer won't show you, just running in the background. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's kind of a souped up version of MS Config.
MS Config. That's what I was trying to say. Yeah.
It's a great tool.
Yeah, you can identify what's running. You can, if you're unsure about what you see that's running in that, like it doesn't make any sense to you, just throw it up in Google.
Yeah, exactly.
Learning
to Google something is a skill in itself.
Oh, boy, you're telling me.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything I could have done with learning about what I've learned without Google. And Podnuts, but yeah. Oh, I see the next tool. Yeah.
This is actually something I've only purchased in the last maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and that's Fabs Auto Backup 4. I got a system in, and it was in bad shape with viruses, and it had like 8 or 9 profiles, and I just looked at this thing and thought, oh no. So. I know the software developer of Fabs Auto Backup was on one of the shows quite some time, so I'd listened to that, and I've heard some feedback on it. So I took the plunge, and I think the tech version is maybe €50, which is about $70. But it saved me you don't have to install it. You drop it into your computer. Or drop it into your client's computer, hit a button, and it will back up pretty much desktop, my documents, music, profile settings, and it will do all profiles at the same time.
Oh, so wait, did you say it doesn't install, so it's standalone?
Yeah, it's standalone.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, the new version seems to be standalone.
Ho, ho, ho. Okay, let me ask you this. So you say it's full of infections. So it pulls over, I think my documents, all of the common, and I think you have a selection of all the different things for it to back up, to tell it to back up,
yeah.
But including settings and favorites, stuff like that, desktop background, themes or whatever. But how do you know, have you used it enough? Since the computer's infected, it doesn't, like pull over viruses too, does it? It's like hidden, or do you know?
No, it's got a specific list of options that you can choose, and there'd only be a small amount of those options that would be part of your hidden folders where most of the viruses are going to hide anyway.
Yeah, because I've had on a few occasions like some fake JPEGs, and that I've had virus software flag, and it was actually a fake JPEG file. I've just wondered if Fabs picks up on that, or would it pull that over? I would think it would probably pull it over, but that's kind of rare.
It'll probably pull it over, but
man,
I'm not sure if I backed up to my network drive or my local external, because I know my bench machine I've got Kaspersky. Antivirus, which is a great product.
So that would be a really good idea to pull everything over to an external and then scan that before you load it up on the new OS or wherever you're going to be putting it.
The only thing I did notice with Fabs Auto Backup is that when you're restoring those profiles, you got to do it one by one. So, I mean, when you either cleared off the viruses or reinstall Windows, you go in, so you drop your standalone Fabs Auto Backup in, and you hook up your external hard drive, and you go restore. But you can only do it to whatever profile you're in at the time. Now, maybe he's going to change that, or maybe I was doing it wrong, but that's what I found when I did use it.
Okay, so you just had to kind of go in and create those accounts again, and then run fabs on each one of those to restore.
Now,
okay.
Now saying that, it's going to pull in a lot of settings and stuff that you're never going to think of bringing in.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I hear. I'm also not a user of that, and I think, especially since you said multi-users and standalone, why wouldn't I use it? That's just great, man. Great tip. Awesome.
Yeah.
Fabs Auto Backup 4.
Yeah, I think it's $70. It's definitely worth it if you're doing a lot of virus removals or reinstalls. It's a must-have.
Awesome, man. Good tip. That's good
stuff.
The next
one is probably an obscure tool and something that people are not going to use too often. It's called Super Grub Disk. And what Super Grub Disk is a bootable CD. And what it does is it highlights maybe hidden partitions, like recovery partitions and that sort of thing. And where I found it's useful is when Vista came out a couple of years ago and people were like, oh, it's so slow, and they go back and put XP on it. And a couple of years later, they'll come back and they're like, look, I'm looking to sell this on and I need to put Vista back on. But when they go to use a recovery partition under the bootloader from XP, it's not actually recognizing it. So what Super Grub Disk is, you boot this into your laptop or your computer and it'll actually reveal the hidden partitions. So you can go in and you can boot from whatever partition you like. So you can boot into your recovery and it'll be like it's just come off the shelf.
Yes. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Door Geeks talked about this quite often because it's a Linux-based program, I believe. Really good for, like you say, for restoring partitions, hidden partitions. So it definitely is a good one. One that I think any tech should keep in their toolkit. Because I know exactly what you're talking about, you know, you go to boot the computer and the partition's not there. And it's like, dang, how do you restore that? Super Grub Disk.
And it's not something you're going to use too often, but it's just something I wanted to mention. It's very useful. Put it in the back of your CD case. You might get one or two uses a year.
I agree. Totally agree.
The next item is it's a tool from Microsoft which is quite useful, which is obviously unusual from Microsoft. It's an SEO analysis tool. Now, this was provided by a friend of mine, and it only works on Vista or 7. It doesn't work on XP due to the requirements of it. But if you install it, I'll actually put this in the chat. Oh, it's in there. Okay, cool.
Yeah, sorry about that. I did.
No, it's cool. And it basically gives you an analysis of your website, and it's quite thorough in terms of what it gives you. I ran it just before the show, and it's come up with like 450 errors of mine, and it ranges from say broken links to headers missing, or your description is too long, so it's kind of optimizing it for the description on search engines, which is, it's a really good tool. And I mean, you could probably spend weeks looking over it, but there's a couple of things in there that will kind of get your site in order.
Wow. Yeah, it looks like here it's really easy to use. You download it as administrator. You log on to your server as an administrator account, and then you double click on the MSI file. Yeah, that is really cool. Wow. So this gives you just all the information that you need to know about what might be, I guess the search engine optimization would be just like using AdWords, for instance. It would just give you what does it do? Does it?
It kind of gives you information on how to improve your SEO. So I mean, one of the big things on my side is the alternative text for images. Now, it's something that I got to spend time on. So every time you have an image on your website, it's a config logo dot JPEG or PNG. So within your HTML files, you can give that an alternative text. So in order to get better SEO, you should put in something like PC and laptop repair in Dublin, Ireland, or wherever you're based. So you give it an alternative name, and Google, Yahoo, and Bing will pick up on it and it'll improve your rank a bit.
That is a killer tool, man. Great find.
But I mean, and the thing is, if you don't understand what it's saying, you can always, it gives you a once you double click in, it gives you details of what they're actually trying to tell you.
Cool. So I guess if you go to, for everybody listening, if you go to Microsoft.com and downloads and you do the Search Engine Optimization SEO Toolkit 1.0, you'll probably come across it. I give you the link, but it's a little long. Great find, Mark.
I think I'm almost at the end.
Sure.
I think one of the big things here in Ireland and the UK is finding a good source of parts. I mean, I know with you guys in the US, with so many people, you've got a huge market, but over here we've only got, I think, 4 million in Ireland, and there's about 60 in the UK, so we're kind of a lot smaller. Originally, I was buying a lot of parts from a place in the UK called Rolta. That's rolta.co.uk. And they're a good source for laptop screens, AC adapters, DC jacks, keyboards. But recently, I found a supplier here in Ireland, which will be of use to anyone that's listening close to me. And that's laptopparts.ie. And the guy there is called John Sherwin, and he's been a great help to me in terms of getting parts, whether it's simple stuff like screens, keyboards, or recently I got about, I got about 60 DC jacks off him, which were a variety of, I think, maybe 20 to 30, just so I have them on hand rather than wait maybe 2 to 3 days for delivery.
Yeah, I would imagine you would want to try to keep stock of as much commonly used items as you can, being where you're at.
Yeah. I mean, well, thankfully, with John's probably 10 miles away from where I'm based, so it's if I'm stuck for a part and I got to get it that day, I can call over. But he actually does deliveries over by my way, so if I order today, I'll get it tomorrow morning.
Oh man, you got it nice like that.
Yeah.
I don't even get stuff that quick here.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few times where I've had to order kind of motherboards from the US, but I mean, I get them in probably 4 to 5 days, which is pretty good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that kind of surprises me. I figured it'd be longer than that, but I guess that's not.
And that'll be kind of express with USPS, so it wouldn't be too bad.
Gotcha. Yeah, man, it's good to give out quality information from your side of the pond for people who listen to Podnuts Daily, so they can, find out where to get good parts from, because I'd imagine that'd be, we always talk about things here in the U.S. and even the U.K., but yeah, that's UK and Ireland, huh? That's great.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think awesome. I'm just about out of information.
Okay. Well, we have some emails and some voicemails. If you're done, we'll just go to those.
Sure. Go ahead.
Great. Okay. Let's see if I can mess this up. Okay. This is from Amit or Amit. Can't pronounce it, but at any rate, he says, I am trying to find out the issue with an IBM ThinkPad T41. There is no video, only the battery and AC power lights come on. The hard drive light does not come on. I have tried attaching it to an external monitor, but the laptop does not seem to be booting at all. Any ideas how to proceed? Well, I would start taking things off of the board, any kind of peripherals, CD drive, memory, Maybe Swap Memory is the known good one. Any NIC cards, any, you know, wireless cards, you know, battery. I think you already mentioned that. You know, just start taking parts off the motherboard and keep trying to power it up before you make any diagnosis. Anything to add to that, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, for the likes of video problems with laptops, I'll generally strip the laptop right down to the motherboard.
Yeah.
See, with a CPU, one stick of RAM, and go from there. Really, really basic. I mean, there's not a whole lot else that it needs to run. So
that's right.
Just start from there. But I mean, with video problems, you could always send it over to Lotfi, but
yeah, I'm sure Lotfi would appreciate that. I've just had so many occasions when I was doing that. I didn't get any video. I had the laptop took apart, you know, keyboard off, you know, memory I swapped out, got the motherboard almost practically laying on my bench, and I'm right down to like the last component to pull off. And I'm almost giving up, like, this is motherboard. And as soon as I pull off that component, you know, and it sometimes is like a NIC card, and power on and it powers up, you know, and you're like, wow, you know, that one little component was keeping the entire freaking motherboard from even powering on. So yeah, be sure, Amit, I hope I'm not messing that up, that you just, you know, eliminate every other component before you call it quits on that. Okay, let's see. We got something here from Jacob. Let's see. Let me get the usual love the show. Keep up the good work. And I think you guys are all freaking amazing out of the way. Thank you, man. I love the high quality work you freaking amazing people produce. I feel that all of the media attention is Mac malware. On this Mac malware incident is getting simply guarantees that there will be more incidents and breakouts on the way soon. I think he's referring to the viruses on a Mac that hit the tech news here recently. Yeah. Now I've cleaned viruses off several Macs in my shop, and I'm certain to tell all of my Mac customers or Mac potentials to have an active antivirus on their machine. I've got nothing but good things to say about Sophos antivirus for the Mac. For a free solution, it still provides decent protection. It runs quietly in the background and doesn't hitch system performance. Now, in my virus cleanup for Macs, I use several tools, including Sophos, but I'll save that for when I'm on the show. Oh, cool. He's coming on the show. I've read several hundred printed pages, several books about the malware world, am actively cleaning viruses off of people's computers, and am constantly researching the field. Virus coders, writers love attention. Plus, there's more and more Apple product users. That's a lot of people to scam and hack. I think this is the beginning of a shift in the computer world. I think we're going to see a lot more viruses on Macs in the very, very near future. Hey, Mark, do you work on Macs?
I've done some work on them. Keyboard replacements, a couple of screens, which are a real pain.
Man, are you? You're not kidding.
Yeah.
So you've heard about this virus on Macs thing that this happened recently?
Yeah, I've been reading about it. No, I haven't seen any into the shop or into the office or anything, but I have read about it, and it's going to become more prominent with Apple getting more market share.
Yeah, I don't know really what to think about it. I don't like particularly working on Macs, but Jacob here mentions Sophos, so that's would be one thing to consider when trying to clean up a Macintosh computer. I haven't seen any viruses. I'm like you, man. I got screen replacements, you know, ones that have been dropped. Setting up printers on Macs can be a pain in the rear sometimes, but okay, Jacob, thank you for that information. And I think I got some of the emails we'll do next week. I got a couple of voicemails here if we're ready for that. There's a pretty fairly lengthy voicemail here from David, the big nerd.
Dave, the big nerd. Got a good story that popped up this week in my young career as a PC technician. Little background first. In my area, there are an awful lot of retired people, and I've made a decision that that's the type of customer that I'm going to go after. So I've got ads running that would reach them, and I do some other things that would reach these older people. And it's starting to work for me. Last Thursday, got a call from an older lady who had had another tech in there, and he had done some work, and she wasn't happy with it. Apparently she'd been using Outlook Express. He replaced that with, quote, Marilla Thunderbird. She didn't like Marilla Thunderbird, but it had been working up until this guy's last visit. And then the thing that kind of cracked me up was that she was mad because she said that he had screwed up her copy of FreeCell. So I'm thinking, okay, fine, I'm going to go fix FreeCell, which will take all of a minute, and then I'll straighten out the Thunderbird. So I go, I show up, very old, very elderly lady. She's probably well into her 70s, maybe even her 80s. We sit down, and first thing she wants to do is show me FreeCell. For all the listeners, I can't believe I'm out on a call to fix FreeCell, but yeah, that's what I'm doing. These are the people I'm trying to serve, and if they can't make it work, then they need the help. So, and I'm thinking that the FreeCell will take me all of about 10 seconds to fix. So she pops it open, and I didn't play FreeCell ever. I mean, I fiddled around with it when I got my very first computer, and then pretty much ignored it. Anyway, she pops it open, and she starts to play the game, and I'm watching her. And, you know, in FreeCell, the objective is just like in regular solitaire. You're supposed to build your the cells, ace, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on. First thing she tells me is that there is no one card. I said, well, isn't the ace the one? Well, I guess. Okay, fine. So she starts playing, and I'm watching. And she takes a 7 card and tries to place it up in the open, the foundation, I think it's called. Of course, the game won't let that go there. So then she tries to take a 5 and put it in another spot. She says, see, it won't stay. It's not going where it's supposed to go. And I said, ma'am, I think you're supposed to play. You start with aces and then 2, 3, and 4. No, that's not the way it's played. And then she points to, on the lower left of the screen in FreeCell, there's a game number. And in this case, it was game number 7,532 or something like that. She says, what you're supposed to do is get the card number that are up matching that game number. And I said, no, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't play it. You play it. I don't. I'm pretty sure that's not the way it's played. I said, let me sit down. So I sit down, and I fiddle with it for a minute. I look into the options to see if there's a different way to play the game that I don't know about. There's not. So then I open up the instructions, and I read the instructions, and I had it right. You know, of course, you play ace, 2, 3, 4. So I read that to her, and she looks at it and says, no, that's not right. And at this point, I'm thinking, okay, I'm starting to think I may be dealing with a lady with mental deficiency. Maybe she's got Alzheimer's or some other kind of mental deficiency. And I said, well, let me do a little more research. And so I fired up Internet Explorer 6 there on the old XP box, went out on the internet and read the rules again. And I read them to her again. She said, well, yeah, that's just not right. That's just not the way the game is played. You're supposed to get the card numbers up, like, to match the game number. So, okay, I do a little more work. What I learned is, and I didn't know this, the FreeCell apparently comes baked in with 32,000 games, and that game number was simply the number of the game. So there might be a game that's, number 7,503, and there might be a game that's number 27,642. And I said, so when you get a five-digit game number, how do you put that up in those four slots? Well, you just leave out the first digit. Oh, okay. Finally, it dawns on me, and this whole time she's getting pissed with me. I can see she's getting mad at me. Sorry, pissed. Didn't mean to say that. Trying to keep it PG. And finally, I flip over to YouTube and find a video on how to play freestyle, and it's about a 3-minute video, and we sit there and watch it. And of course, it shows her the right way to play. And as I'm sitting there, I'm watching her, and her lips are quivering. And I think, oh my God, this little old lady is going to start crying on me because, and here's the kicker, she's played, according to the stats in the freestyle game, she's played over 19,000 games. That's it. That's right. 19,000 plus games she had played. I was stunned. Anyway, we're watching the video, and as I'm watching the video, her lip starts quivering, and I think she's about to cry. And the video ends, and she sits there quietly for a minute, and she says, well, I guess I used to play it that way, but I stopped because it was too easy. So, anyway, long story short, there's a lesson in all this for you. No, this was not a technical challenge. This was a person challenge, a people challenge. And bless her heart, she was living in this house. Her husband had died a couple years ago. And she literally did nothing on that computer but check her email through Marilla and play Freecell. And the Marilla thing, there was nothing wrong with Mozilla. And there's nothing wrong at all with Thunderbird. But it took me 45 minutes to get to the point where she understood that her freestyle, that she'd been playing freestyle wrong the whole time. And the worst thing to come out of all this is I'm afraid I may have taken her fun away without intending to. Anyway, the people aspect of this is be careful. People don't want to find out that they're dumb. And in this case, what I did was I used a third party to show her. I didn't try to explain. I gave up pretty quickly and me trying to explain it because it was only agitating her. So I went to a third party. In this case, it was that YouTube video. A little long, I know. I love the show. Keep up the great work. Appreciate it. Bye.
Wow. Thanks, David. Freecell. I want to go back to a couple of things that he said right at the beginning of that, which was he made it a point to target older people in his area because I guess, it was where he's at is more prominent, I guess, retirement communities or whatever. So, if you're going to target older people, some of that stuff, and I don't have nothing against older people. I'm going to be old one day. when it comes to the mind and forgetting things and being set in your way, so to speak, some of that stuff comes along with the territory. And I just sure hope that David there got paid for his ordeal there because, wow, I don't know how many of those customers I would want to have to deal with. How about you, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of patience. And I mean, there really is no stupid question. Nobody knows everything. No. So exactly. If you have patience, you can deal with clients face to face. If you don't, it's probably not the industry to be in.
That is so true. That is so true. So, yeah, I've had my share of, those type of customers. And I think every tech has. Just targeting them. I don't know about that, but.
Yeah. Actually, I posted something in the chat earlier on. I got a message from a friend today. He had a client call him up and he goes, hey, I've just installed a new scanner and, I've been waiting for 15 minutes for this document to scan. So my friend ran through a few troubleshooting items with him and still nothing. So he remotely connected in and the first thing that pops up is a virus scan. He goes, look, it's been scanning for 15 minutes and I don't know where the document is. I mean, it's just like, oh, that's your AV. That's not your document scanner.
Dude.
So, I mean, you're going to come across stuff like that. You just got to kind of.
Oh, yeah. We all have
not
our
anything and get on with it.
Yeah, we all have our stories, and David, that certainly was one to share about FreeCell. Hey, we should have one more from Door to Door Geek.
Hello, Steve, Door to Door Geek. Wanted to leave this message for Projects Daily. http://connect.microsoft.com/system-sweeper. What this is a Microsoft boot scanner. So if you have an affected computer, you go to that site, you download an ISO, you burn the ISO, you boot to the ISO, and it is a boot-level virus malware scanner for Windows. This is something that's been needed for a long time. I haven't had a chance to try it. No one I know has had a chance to try it, but I hope it is good. It is needed, I will say. Again, that is connect.microsoft.com/system-sweeper. Take it easy, guys. Bye. Oh, Tim's here. Bye.
Yeah, hey, Dor. Yeah, that's System Sweeper by Microsoft. Do we want to trust Microsoft to remove viruses? Well, who would know viruses better than Microsoft, right? I mean, actually, I use Microsoft Security Essentials still, and I used it on installed on my customers' computers. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, I'm actually the same. I've got it on my own computer at home. And like I've been a big fan, and I've heard some people say not so good things about it, but the success I've had with it has been pretty good. And if someone's looking for a free AV, I'll always put Security Essentials on there.
Yeah, no doubt. And I don't know. I have many customers that have Security Essentials on their computer, and I have had very little customers returning with viruses. So and no, I don't sell retail virus scanners yet. I have other ways. I'll get into that later, but yeah, System Sweeper basically is a boot up scanner. It's almost like a rescue CD, like Kaspersky, and it scans for rootkits and what have you. So it's like a rescue CD. It's very interesting to see how that is going to turn out for Microsoft. So you have anything else, Mark, today? Are we going to sign off?
I just want to add something to the virus scanner. I think one of the biggest things is user education. I mean, if you've got a fake AV that's going to pop up, I've just told my clients to literally shut down their computer. I mean, don't even acknowledge that it's popped up. And another thing is I've been getting my clients to install Web of Trust. Because it works great on Google and Facebook, where there's a lot of kind of suspect links out there.
Very good. I think Web of Trust is so much better than, let's say, McAfee Link Scanner, you know, because it's right there in your face. It tells you yes, no.
And it's a traffic light system.
I am.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, Mark. I think we ran over each other there. Go ahead. Now,
I mean, Web of Trust is a basic traffic light system where it's green for go, yellow is warning, and then red for stop. And with the warnings that you get when you click on, I think it's either yellow or orange or a red link, it kind of it's going to make your client think about whether they really need to go to that website.
Yeah, I think it's a really good tool. Very good point. All right. Well, if there's anything else, Mark, we'll sign off. Mark at compfix.ie. Any place else we can find you, Mark, or is that it?
I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/compfix.ie. And my Facebook page is facebook.com/compfix.ie.
Nice. Hey, Mark, thank you very much for being on the show today. I appreciate anybody that ever signs up for Podnuts Daily. You can go to the Podnuts forums at podnuts.com/forums, and there you'll find the sign up sheet there. And that would be in the, I forget where the sign up sheet is. Oh, wow, dude, that's pretty easy. There you go. And I also want to talk about Steve's webinar coming up on June 25th and 26th. Basically, it's everything you need to know about how to podcast, how he's done it, all of his tips and tricks. And you could go to howtopodcast.biz for more information. But it's the 25th and 26th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. All it costs is $50, man. And you can gain all that great wisdom of podcasting here. And also, if you want to email me anything about the show or anything at all, actually, you can send me an email at my new email address, timster@podnuts.com. So I guess until next week, everyone, hey, keep on fixing those computers, and we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Music for Podnuts Daily provided by Evan King at purevolume.com/Evan King.